Back on the Federal Drive with Tom Temin on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu, filling in for Tom. A new report out today paints a somewhat gloomy picture of the federal government's web presence. The Information Technology Innovation Foundation matched up 300 of the government's most popular websites against modern standards and existing federal guidelines. The study found agencies are doing fairly well when it comes to security, but most websites are tough to use from mobile devices. Many of them don't comply with laws requiring them to be accessible to people with disabilities, and in general, they're slow to load. Daniel Castro is a vice president at ITIF. He says website sluggish behavior is partly because the White House has never set government-wide standards for speed.
This is an important factor to users because we've seen just lots and lots of research show that if websites are slow, users leave and they're dissatisfied. So it doesn't matter how good the rest of the site is. If it's not fast, they won't use it. So here we looked at two things. We looked at the page load speed on desktops and on mobile devices. There's different ways you can optimize for each of those. And the results really kind of varied here. We found that on speed, there were 22% of websites that failed the speed test for desktops, and then 64% of these federal sites that we looked at failed the speed test for mobile devices. And these were even, kind of some of the more popular sites like GSA.gov or the FTC's identitytheft.gov or the National Cancer Institute.
And I know it's not always easy to look under the hood to see what's happening on the back end of a lot of these systems, but are there common reasons, as far as you can tell, that page load speeds are poor and easy ways to fix them?
Yeah, there's a number of factors here. I mean, one of the, if you look at what basically can be done on these sites, there's two things, right? One is on the server and networking side, where you want to make sure you have the right resources and the right network capabilities there. And that we didn't really spend as much time on because it's harder for us to assess from the outside.
Right.
What we can look at is basically how the websites themselves are optimized. So do they do things like optimize how they're using JavaScript? Are they compressing images? Are they, prioritizing the content that's above the fold so it appears to load faster for the user? And, across the board, there were just lots of opportunities for, developers on these sites to use what are really industry best practices here.
All right, so let's talk about mobile. You did find, as you alluded to, some not so great page load speeds on mobile, but also not a great mobile experience in terms of usability, readability on a lot of federal websites.
Yeah, that was a consistent problem as well. We found 41% of the websites we looked at weren't mobile friendly. And, again, these are kind of, big sites, weather.gov, treasury.gov, trade.gov. Again, the problem here is that there's not, you had federal websites that weren't basically following best practices in terms of, how you can optimize the mobile experience.
And then on security, a little better story to tell on security. And I think as the report points out, federal government websites in a lot of cases are ahead of some very large private sector websites.
Yeah, this was a really interesting area because we looked at two metrics on security. We looked at whether the site was using SSL and whether or not they had DNSSEC, which is a way of securing your DNS entries. Now, what's interesting here is both of these are requirements for the executive branch. So you would think it would be 100% if all websites are in compliance. What we found, of course, was that there were a number of websites that did not follow this. We had 33% of the websites we looked at failed the SSL test that we did. It was either because they just simply didn't have the certificates, or they had implemented SSL, but they had very poor implementation. So it was bad enough that those were kind of failing these sites.
Right.
And then you had about 10% of federal websites that didn't enable DNSSEC, which is a way you can securing how the domain names looked up. Now, one of the interesting findings we had here was that a lot of the websites that were failing were federal government sites, but they weren't necessarily part of the executive branch. So they didn't necessarily fall under the requirements, although certainly some of them did. But it doesn't really give them excuse not to follow these practices. But we did also, compare how the government did compared to, the top kind of websites, the most popular websites in the private sector, non-government sites. And in this space, the government is somewhat ahead. I mean, you have, the government, consistently using SSL and DNSSEC more than the private sector. That said, when it comes to government websites, we do kind of expect the best on security, and they weren't performing as well as they could be.
Yeah, and in at least a few cases, there were actual known vulnerabilities that you pointed out on particular websites.
Yeah, I think that was one of the most kind of disappointing findings in terms of, you know, the types of problems that we saw. Because when it comes to security, I mean, you do expect, you know, when there's a known vulnerability that is widely disclosed, that, you know, any CIO would be taking responsibility for checking to see if they are exposed to that threat, and then taking the necessary steps to address them. And, you know, here we found that there were a number of problems where there were, you know, known problems that could easily be resolved, and they simply hadn't been. And that's the kind of issue that, you know, you want, you know, strong kind of accountability for to really address.
And people can go look at the report for themselves and see some of those examples, but I'll just highlight a few. The Federal Election Commission, U.S. Postal Service, the House Republicans website all had some of those known vulnerabilities you were just talking about. On SSL, you know, notwithstanding your comment earlier about the fact that it is a federal requirement, I guess I could also understand it being a lower priority in some cases for agencies, because when you're dealing in cases when you're dealing with entirely public information, stuff that you want to have out there. You know, if I'm going to the Forest Service website, for example, to download a map of my national forest, do I particularly care if the connection is encrypted?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's certainly, you know, kind of valid, you know, trade-offs that you could make. So, I mean, first, as you said, I mean, there is a federal requirement there, so we kind of expect those requirements to met. You know, there's kind of a broader question, though, about, you know, just to what extent people want privacy when they're browsing websites. And that's really been the push behind having, you know, SSL everywhere on basically all websites. So, you know, individuals have the right, basically, when they're using that, to read things privately and know that nobody can be eavesdropping on what they're looking at, even if it is just going to a forestry website. But, you know, maybe they're looking up information on the tax code, and they don't want anyone to know exactly what it is they're doing. Or maybe they're looking up something on a trade website. And again, there's maybe, you know, it's not that the information they're getting is necessarily should be private in a broader sense, but, you know, that their actions looking it up should be private.
All right, let's hit on the last focus area that you talk about, accessibility, which is another area where there are very clear federal requirements that agencies are not always meeting.
Yeah, so, you know, accessibility is, you know, looking at how accessible sites are for people with disabilities. There are, as you said, a number of guidelines that, you know, federal websites are expected to, as well as in the private sector, there's requirements there. We found that 42% of the websites we looked at failed the accessibility test. And again, these are, you know, kind of major sites, trade.gov, irs.gov. And, you know, this is an area that also is very disappointing, because it shows that, one, there's clear guidelines that these agents should be following, and they're not following them. And two, you know, they're really not, you know, trying to look out for the user experience, because, you know, one of the big reasons to, you know, push for accessibility is you're really trying to take all users into account. You want to be very inclusive and make sure everyone can access these sites. And there are just kind of very common mistakes being made across these sites, which shows that they're not taking the time to actually test them and then address the problems they find.
In the report, you recommend that the White House lead a bunch of website improvement sprints. Give us some sense of how easily fixable all the problems that we've just been talking about are, how long these resolutions might take. Are we talking big money involved?
Well, so there are, you know, there are certainly improvements that could be made in the short term that wouldn't cost a lot and would make a big difference on the, you know, overall performance of these sites. And that's why we recommended a sprint, you know, a series of sprints that the White House should lead to address these problems. I mean, so for example, you know, when you look at the security space, where you have known vulnerabilities, you want to get those addressed. When you look at, you know, desktop and mobile page load speed, there are, you know, you can look at this and you can see that, you know, certainly there are revisions that would be harder to make, but sometimes the changes are actually, you know, fairly straightforward. And the problem here is we're not having really much attention being placed on these types of problems. And the reason to do a sprint is to really draw attention to it, help, you know, share learning and knowledge across agencies, so as they're dealing with the same problems, they can develop opportunities to address them quickly, and really, you know, kind of move the needle across the board on how these agencies deal with these types of issues.
And because of time constraints, we can't get into all six of your recommendations. Again, I'll refer people back to the report. But let me hit on just one other one, which is you recommend that OMB lead a website consolidation initiative. Talk to me about the rationale behind that.
Yeah, so there was a website consolidation initiative back in 2011. You know, there were at that time 20,000 federal websites across 2,000 domains. That number has dropped substantially, and it continues to drop actually with the new administration. But there's really a need to kind of evaluate basically, do some of these websites, you know, should they exist? Can the information be consolidated on one single website that can be have more resources put into it so it can be better maintained? You know, that's one way to really have agencies start to take more ownership of these systems and make sure that they don't outlast their kind of planned life cycle.
Yeah, and I guess also make sure that the scarce resources that you do have that are devoted to maintaining federal websites aren't maintaining more than you actually need.
That's right. I mean, you know, one of the challenges we see is that there's websites that, you know, it just appears nobody's really updating, nobody really has any ownership over, and nobody's paying attention to. But, you know, these are still websites that, you know, people are depending on for information. And, you know, we want that information to be accurate. We want the websites to be accessible, secure, convenient to access. But there's really not a lot of good metrics right now measuring how well these sites are performing. We think getting better metrics is one way to start increasing accountability here.
That's Daniel Castro, a vice president at the Information Technology Innovation Foundation. We'll post a link to the report we've been talking about, and you can share this interview with colleagues at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive. Still to come on Federal News Radio, yes, the budget process is broken, seemingly beyond fixing, but there are ways federal agencies and their managers can soldier on. First, though, NASA's latest work to help build a vibrant commercial space industry. This is the Federal Drive with Tom Temin on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu, filling in for Tom.